I'm Ed Randall, and you're listening to Baseball and Barbecue.
This is Greg Lazinski, and you're listening to Baseball BBQ.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings Podcast, and you're listening to Jeff and Len on Baseball and Barbecue, one of my favorite podcasts, and I know it's one of yours too. The only problem is, after I get done listening to it, I'm hungry. All right, guys, take it away.
Welcome to episode number 49, and damn, am I excited! Jeff?
You're excited again.
Yes, I am Len Aberman, and you are...
I'm Jeff Cohen.
And the reason I'm so excited, guys, episode 49, and it is our two-year anniversary. Jeff, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Two years.
2 years.
Who would have thunk it?
Not me.
I think I said that at the first anniversary show.
when we started this podcast, thinking two schmucks talking baseball and barbecue. Well, we're still two schmucks.
We're still two schmucks. Yeah.
But two-year older schmucks.
That's right.
It's been...
a hell of a ride.
It really has. I've got a list here that we're going to go over. Some of the guests that we've had this year. I don't think we'll go back 2 years. We'll talk about this year. We talked about 1 year for our 1 year anniversary. Right out of the gate, back in, January.
Right.
I'm looking at our list here. You know what? January 5th, we released episode number 26. And that was On the Road with Len and Jeff.
Oh, that's when we went to the barbecue festival down in Atlantic City. No, it was not. It was On the Road. Where did we go?
I don't know, but because that barbecue festival was episode 30. And that was Baseball and Barbecue Atlantic City Expo with baseball talk thrown in.
Oh, that was in March. Okay.
So the question is, where did we go January 5th on this road trip?
Is that when we went to look at barbecue grills in stores?
Probably.
Okay.
It probably is. We might have wanted to do a little prep in advance.
Give us a break. It was last year, almost a year ago.
But that's it. The way we started the year.
Okay.
All right. We had a... then in January, we also had Gary Mack and Barry Newman. We did Hall of Fame talk.
Oh, we're going to do a little of that today. Because
yes, we
did have a couple of new Hall of Famers who went in via the modern committee.
Right. And then we also want to talk about the ballot.
The ballot, yes.
For that's coming up.
Derek Jeter, we know.
Okay, well, there's more on the ballot than Derek Jeter, but yeah.
No. Some writer actually put just Derek Jeter just because he wanted Derek Jeter to go in by himself.
All right, you're
so just clear the ballot. Just make the Derek Jeter ballot and be done with it.
All right, you're jumping the gun. We will get to that. Let's just talk a little bit about the year in review, okay? We had Shane Draper of Grilla Grills. What a great guest. We had him on a couple of times. Actually, it was such a great interview it was a long interview also, and we split it into two. So we had a part one and a part two.
Right. Then we went to Atlantic City.
Yes. And before that, we re-released our interview with none other than Negro Leagues Baseball Hall of Fame, Negro Leagues Baseball, I should say, Museum, Bob Kendrick.
Right.
Who, he should be in the Hall of Fame. That's just my opinion.
Right.
All right. Then, of course, right, Atlantic City. We also, you had an interview with Eric Gouldsberry of This Great Game.
That's right, This Great Game.
Right, which is that website.
Great website, check it out.
Then we took another road trip. We went to New York City We went to the city of the Museum of the City of New York for the Jackie Robinson exhibit.
That was in April. Wow. Okay.
And we are looking forward to the opening of the Jackie Robinson Museum, which I believe is going to be in, is it April of 2020?
April 15, 2020. That's the tentative date right now.
Right. And then, of course, we had Shane Draper again.
Right.
But let's take a break from reviewing the year in review and listen to a special anniversary greeting from one of our listeners.
Baseball and BBQ, what is up? Happy two-year anniversary. I just wanted to give you guys a call and congratulate you guys on a successful 2 years. You guys have been really fun to listen to. Your knowledge is impeccable. And I really look forward to seeing what the future holds with you guys. Keep doing what you're doing. And looking forward to seeing you guys or listening to you guys as time goes on. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. That was great. Who was that from?
Have no clue. Just a loyal listener.
No clue, huh? I have no idea who that was.
But thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was very nice.
They didn't leave their name.
Yeah. Whoever you are, we thank you.
So let's just mention a few other people that we had on.
Ed Randall.
Ed Randall.
The Ed Randall interview.
Yeah, that.
Guys, listen to Ed Randall on Sirius XM on Saturday mornings and WFAN on Sunday mornings during the baseball season.
He knows more about baseball than I'll ever know. I mean, than we'll ever know combined. His stories are great.
Yeah.
We had Jamie Previance.
Yes,
Jamie. Okay. Cookbook author for Weber.
That's right.
We had Ron Swoboda.
Yeah.
We had Todd Pratt. We had Kyle Halverson from ThermoWorks. Chris Epting, author of Roadside Baseball, and Laurie Rubinson of FAN. Sean Ludwig of The Smoke Sheet.
That's right, Mark Littell.
Right, and now we have another anniversary greeting.
Hi, this is Gary Mack from Mets Musings and Talking Golf with Gary, and I can't believe it's 2 years of baseball and barbecue. I must have put on 50 pounds listening to this show. Congratulations, guys, on your two-year anniversary. Let's hope for another 22 years.
Well, thank you to the great Gary Mack.
You do that pretty well. You know, after 2 years, I think, do that as well as I do.
Okay, thank you very much. But who else did we have on the show since we're reminiscing?
Okay, well, let's talk about, we had on...
Well, we had David Marks.
Right, of Operation Barbecue Relief.
Yes, we did. You went on a show without me with Lindell Scranton. You went on that show, Barbecue Tailgate...
Right.
Barbecue guys?
Right, Tailgate Barbecue guys. Okay, yeah. And we also had on, Ryan Cooper.
Who we wish all the best. I know he's going through some medical issues now. Ryan, your friends here at Baseball and BBQ wish you nothing but the best.
Yes, we do. Speedy recovery, Ryan.
Then we had an author of a great book, The Year of the Pitcher, Sridhar Papu, came on with us.
Yes. And then we had, we did another on the road, right. We went to the Morris Jumel Mansion, and we had an interview with
Neil Scher.
Right, for the Polo Grounds exhibit.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And we also went on the road, well, we had Barry Lyons. We didn't go on the road with Barry, but we did go on the road to Smokehouse Barbecue in Garden City, New York, and we interviewed the pitmaster, none other than Manny Voumvirakis. He was very nice to us. And then our last episode before this one, we interviewed author Jeremy Beer, who wrote a great book on Oscar Charleston.
And you gave some holiday gift guides.
Right, and we... talked about all the people that we've had on that you should purchase from. And you know what, Jeff? That's in the past.
Yes.
Right? And then, I think it was in The Lion King, he hits him or something and he says, why'd you do that? Because sometimes the past hurts or something like that. But that was the past.
Yes.
Now let's move on.
Right.
Let's go to the future. Let's talk baseball. Let's talk barbecue. And let's enter year three of baseball and barbecue.
Okay.
But.
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 Before we do that, we have a email.
Yes, and a text.
And
should
a text.
We do them? Should we do them just together? Get them out of the way. Not get them out of the way, but
well,
all right.
Well, why don't you do it? Here's an email from Larry Roush.
All right. Hi, Jeff and Len. Congratulations on your upcoming 2-year anniversary of the Baseball and BBQ podcast. It's wonderful how you provide your listeners with all these great interviews of interesting people and either their businesses or books they have written. The barbecue segments are great and provide helpful tips with the non-expert barbecue connoisseur, whether it's related to winterizing the grill, purchasing various smokers, or even buying a barbecue thermometer. Your listeners, including myself, are looking forward to many more episodes of your podcast. Keep up the good work. Happy holidays to both you and your families, as well as all your listeners. Best regards, Larry R. Thank you, Larry. Larry's been listening from the very beginning.
Yes, thank you, Larry.
But we have another Larry, who also...
Another Larry. It's like, this is Larry and my brother Larry.
Who wants to also send us greetings.
Okay. Let me just get out my glasses here. Hey, Lynn and Jeff. Lynn.
Yeah, well, he doesn't know me very well.
Okay. Hey, Lynn and Jeff. Thank you for another great year of your show. I've been with the podcast from the very beginning, and I've seen you guys get better and better with your ideas and your interviews. But one thing that has stayed the same is that you guys stick to your true personalities, quirks, and you always stay true to your feelings. I feel that you guys have become real pros, but you still have the guys we could still have a beer and talk about baseball and BBQ. Here to another great year, in fact, 10 more years. Well, thank you, Larry. That's very nice of you.
And I want to know about our quirks. We are kind of quirky, right?
You're quirky, I know that.
All right, so that's it. Guys, we gave ourselves a pat on the back. It's 2 years, yada, yada, yada. Let's move on. Year 3 starts now. Boom. Hall of Fame. Let's talk about it.
All right. So, Larry. Larry. You're not Larry. Len.
No.
I got Larry on the brain.
Say Larry, Len, Len.
Len, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Just don't call me late for dinner.
Okay. So you know, we have 2 new Hall of Famers. They came into the modern baseball era ballot. These are a committee of, I think, 16 either players, executives, Hall of Famers that vote on this ballot, and 2 new Hall of Famers are Marvin Miller and Ted Simmons, and congratulations to them, Marvin Miller, who's no longer with us, but Ted Simmons is going to go in the Hall of Fame on induction day.
And your feelings on Ted Simmons? I'm not going to talk about Marvin Miller because it's very hard to, that's great, he's in, but we talk about players really, so let's talk about Ted Simmons.
Well, I am going to talk about Marvin Miller.
Okay, fine, fine.
But first we will talk about Ted Simmons.
But are you going to talk about whether Marvin Miller should be in the Hall of Fame, or are you just going to talk about him and his contribution to baseball?
I will let my feelings known when when I talk about it. You'll just have to wait and see.
Ooh, I'm looking forward to it. All right, okay. So go ahead.
So I just want to let you know that Ted Simmons got 13 votes out of possible 16, so he got 81.3%. Miller got the needed 12 votes, so he got the 75%. Other candidates who did not get the 75% was Darrell Evans, Dave Parker, Steve Garvey, who only got 6 votes. I thought Steve Garvey would get more. Lou Whitaker, again, 6 votes. Again, I thought he would get more. Tommy John, who was a very good pitcher. He pitched for 25 years, so you have maybe a compiler on his side, but he almost got 300 wins, but I think his doctor should go into the Hall of Fame because he changed the game.
Right.
Would you believe Don Mattingly, Thurman Munson, and Dale Murphy each received less than 3 votes? That's unbelievable.
Yeah, but it's totally different voting than the regular Hall of Fame ballot. So the people on this committee change.
Yes.
Well, as the writers do, of course, but it's different. You know, it's not, I mean, when you say the percentage and they got 12 votes and out of 16.
Well, that's 75%. That's the
threshold.
No,
I know, but
threshold.
I understand that. But this was made to get people in that didn't necessarily get in before,
right?
But what I'd like to know is who's deciding that these are the players that are being voted for. I mean, there's plenty of players that haven't gotten into the Hall of Fame. Why these particular players?
That's a good question. I don't know who determines that.
Right.
But maybe we can get someone from the Hall of Fame and find out who determines it. Because, you know what? You have Don Mattingly on this ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a contemporary to Keith Hernandez. Why wasn't Keith Hernandez on this ballot? Keith Hernandez, MVP, two-time world champion. Mattingly didn't ever win a World Series. He got in the playoff once.
Right. So, I mean, I'm not saying that Mattingly... we're not saying he shouldn't be there.
No,
But why isn't Keith Hernandez being considered?
And Keith Hernandez changed the position of first base.
Right. And the people that voted, who knows? Is there any kind of bias there? I don't know.
You think last year was any kind of bias? Yeah, the Albanians got in last year.
Yes. So that's the thing. I mean, Thurman Munson, okay?
Now, you mentioned Thurman Munson.
Right.
Ted Simmons... Very good player. I don't know if he's Hall of Famer. But you know what? I would think Thurman Munson was a better player than Ted Simmons.
Yes.
I think so.
Yes.
Apparently the people on this committee did not.
Right. The only thing... I mean, I think Simmons played like 21 seasons.
Simmons played a lot more. Obviously, Thurman died tragically.
Right.
But still, who would you rather have up there at a game on the line?
Definitely Munson.
Yeah.
Definitely. Right. And then, of course... Murphy was two MVPs in a row.
Right.
He
had a very short peak.
Right, yes.
But that peak was great, don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it wasn't sustained, I guess. You know, I guess that's the way people look at it.
Right.
And Lou Whitaker, he should have went in.
What about Parker? Parker should have. I can't believe that he was an incredible player.
Yeah.
And Garvey. When you think about the Dodgers back then with Lopes and Say
and Russell.
Right, and Garvey.
And that infield was together like 10 years.
Right.
That's never going to happen again.
Yeah, I don't... But talk about Miller.
Marvin Miller.
Yeah.
Len, I got to preface this by saying the Major League Baseball Players Association, the union.
Right.
Their union is a different animal compared to all other types of union out there, municipal unions, labor unions, you know, construction, police, fire, teachers, plumbers, blah, 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 all the unions out there, right. Electricians.
Mm-hmm.
I understand it's a union in baseball, but it's so much different. We have to separate that when we talk about Marvin Miller, because it's not, you know, it can't be just, you know, union versus management. This is more, I think it's much different just because of the what's involved, I guess. I understand the issues. Don't get me wrong. The players, they had the reserve clause, which growing up, I was a kid, you know, I didn't know what it was. As an adult, I understand it was wrong to have that in there. Marvin Miller was one of the driving forces to get that out of baseball, and congratulations to him to do that. It really freed up the players. The players can go now where they want to go, where they get paid the most. You just mentioned Gerrit Cole. He got paid the most.
Mm-hmm.
He can go anywhere. Once he chose to go to the Yankees, he could have taken less, but he went for the money, which is fine. I have other issues with Marvin Miller, though. Because in my formative baseball years, when the players threatened to go on strike and actually did go on strike, the face on the back pages of the newspapers was Marvin Miller. He was the face that stopped baseball, that made baseball go on strike. Now, as an adult, I understand the issue of why they did that. But as a kid,
right?
You know, this guy ruined, you know, I couldn't wait to watch baseball, and then it was gone. I struggle with him being accepted into a fun. And now, people, if you disagree with me, you say I'm crazy, you know, please give us a call. You know the number, 516-855-8214. Give us an email, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. You can comment on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at baseballandbbq. You can do it on Instagram, baseballandbarbecue, with barbecues all spelled out. Please, leave a comment. Give us a call. Let's have a discussion. Marvin Miller, what he did for the players was great. There's also things that I still take issue with. Do you know these guys make, an average... $5 million. I mean, even the minimum wage is like $600,000. Do you know the players still get like meal money for the road?
Right.
I mean, come on, meal money.
Their meal money could pay salaries.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
They stay at the best hotels. And I happened to be in Toronto one time on business, and the Yankees were staying at this hotel. It was the Hyatt. It was the top of the line, except Alex Rodriguez had to go to another hotel because he was special at that time. But so they used to have, they used to share a room. They have roommates on the road. Now everybody has their own suite or whatever. You know, the rookies and lower players have regular rooms. The other guys have suites. Like I mentioned, the meal money. They go first class everywhere they go. God bless them. They earned it. They fought for it.
Right.
But, you know, it still boggles my mind to get meal money. And the pension plan. These players, obviously, they'll never have to work another day for their life. Their great-great-grandchildren are already taking, especially the ones making, you know, 30 million. And now I know not all of them do. You know, most of them, you know, even minimum wage is $600,000, like I said. So the average is, what, $5 million a year? I mean, these guys you never heard of getting paid millions of dollars. Right. The pension plan is great for them. But I'm concerned about the players before that, you know, before the union really took charge. These players owe a big debt of gratitude to these guys. And the guys who played in the 50s, the 60s, in the early 70s, they don't have much of a pension plan. They still have to work, to make ends meet. Now, I don't. Obviously, the guys who are famous, like the Sandy Koufax of the world, the Bob Gibsons, you know, they make money on endorsements, whatever. But, you know, there's still plenty of hundreds of thousands of guys who never, you know, you heard of, who played a couple of years in the league. They're not going to sniff any pension.
No, you're right.
You guys could throw some bucks their way.
But I understand what you're saying. You know what? It's these guys. You could look at it like these guys are entertainers, right? That's what you always hear.
Right.
So you always hear, you know, Brad Pitt will get, you know, $25 million for a movie but that takes, you know, 8 weeks to make or whatever. Or Arnold Schwarzenegger will get this amount. And they say, because they're entertainers. Now, you're talking about the guys that came before. Well, it's the same thing in the entertainment business. Look at the guys. I recently have been listening to Howard Stern, and I've been listening to some of his older interviews, right? Because he'll put that on. And I heard an interview with Bob Denver. Okay? Uh-huh. Bob Denver.
Right.
You know, it was Gilligan, right?
Yeah.
So you'd think, okay, Bob Denver, you know, must have done really well. And, I mean, I heard him in the interview, it seemed like he was okay. But you hear, and it wasn't just Bob Denver. It was all these older people, right? These actors and stuff and actresses. They're not getting any kind of residuals. You know, they're not every time an episode of Gilligan's Island is on or an episode of The Brady Bunch or an episode.
No, they
don't get money from that. So it's almost like they are in the same situation as these older players. And there definitely should be something in place for these older players. And that goes to all the leagues. I mean, we talk baseball. But maybe even more so in, like, football, where these guys are, you know, they need knee replacements and all these things. So there should definitely be something. But moving forward, it's progress. And these guys that are, I mean, I think Gerrit Cole should have gotten all that money? That's incredible. That's a ridiculous amount of money. But people will argue they're entertainers.
Right. Now, specifically for Marvin Miller, now, a couple more things. You know, he was very into the players' rights. And that, obviously, that's what we want.
Right.
Yeah. But, there, you know, he probably wasn't involved with the union in when it comes to all the drug testing, all that. That was after him. But it was still his union that really he started. And they really protected players who were using where they should have protected the guys who weren't. The union did nothing to really stop that. And you know what? Neither did the commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that... Now, let me say this. Bud Selig should not be in the Hall of Fame. I think what he did was... Yeah, he made a lot of money for the baseball. I get it. But you know what? I hate the interleague. I hate the you know, they had the All-Star game was determined who home field advantage. He just did so many bad so many bad things. And who Billy Kuhn was the commissioner in the 70s. He also he instituted the baseball at night. So now you can't watch a World Series game in the afternoon anymore. That's over. Who else? Oh, but he also was involved with the collusion thing. So, and yeah, he's in the Hall of Fame. I don't think he should be, but that's the way it is. You know, Marvin Miller, I do have mixed feelings, and it's only because when I was a kid, that I remember that phase on the back of the newspaper, baseball stopped. What do you think?
Well, okay, I want to go back to one thing, though. And we talk about the players and all the money they're making, okay? If there was not money to be made in baseball, if these teams were losing money, they wouldn't be giving these outrageous contracts, right?
Absolutely
now,
true.
We have in New York, we have the team, the Mets, and right now the papers are saying that, you know, Steve Cohen, right,
is going to... Sadly, no relation.
Right, is going to pay, what is it, like $2.8 billion or something?
Yeah.
For not even... He won't even have the full team.
No, 80%.
Right. He won't even... So, not even the full team, and he's going to pay an outrageous sum. Now... Is he paying that because it's just a vanity thing and to be owner of a baseball team, or is it an investment that will eventually pay? Well, these teams, it might be in the beginning, you know, to be an owner of a team, a great thing, you know, a vanity thing. When you look at how the Mets and all these other teams that are sold, how they increase in value, and everyone says, oh, you know, back in this year, they were sold for this amount, and now they're being sold for this. So they're all gaining in value.
Yes, and you know what? Revenues are up, and the players should absolutely share in those revenues, right. And they have.
Right. Yes.
No one's arguing that.
Right.
One more thing I wanted to say about the players, I guess our formative years, you know, baseball teams they stay together. They obviously don't have that anymore.
No.
No, it's completely different, but I want to hear your feeling on Marvin Miller because, like I said, mine are mixed.
Yeah, well, you know what? Like I said, I didn't really follow the baseball executive so much, but I think that he came in at a time, he helped the players, and I think that I hated the strike too. I didn't. I remember when the Expos were. You know, remember when they were, it was the year that they had a great team,
yeah, yeah.
And then there was the strike, and not that I was an Expo fan, but the point was I just remember that season, because everyone talks about how great the Expos were, and that right. was their chance, right? So that's a memory that sticks out. So, of course, I didn't like the strike. Just because they are, look, it's very hard for us to look at it and say, how did these guys strike when they're making all of this money? But there were other issues at stake. You know, the fact that they don't have to stay with the same team. They can move around. They can free agency. But, you know, there is a point. I mean, you still, when players first join a team, they get traded. You know, they could get traded. I mean, you could one day be in New York and the next thing you're in wherever. I mean, it could be all the way across the country. And you don't have any say in the matter.
Right.
So I think that...
Which was, by the way, what the Kurt Flood case was about.
Understood. But
still, you get traded. That's part of the contract. I do want to say this about the union, though. And like I said, this is completely different than any other union there is.
Right.
I remember when the great Tony Gwynn was alive. He took less money to stay in San Diego. The executives at the players' union were livid.
Oh, they were
about that.
They were pissed. Yeah,
and here they're all for the players' freedom, what they want to do.
Right.
Here's what the player wants to do, and they were pissed.
Right.
I didn't understand that at all.
Yeah. Well, they didn't want him setting precedent. They wanted the players to get the most money. I mean, because bottom line is, yeah, they say they represent the players. The player made a choice. They should have lived with it.
Yeah. I mean, remember when A-Rod was traded, almost traded to Boston? He was going to renegotiate that contract
and take less money.
And the player union would forbid it.
Right. He wasn't allowed to. They weren't allowed to do it.
That was his decision.
Right.
But it apparently wasn't his decision. Right. So, you know, the powerful players union, and they are a powerful union.
Yes.
Again, I have mixed feelings about this.
All right, well, I hear you. I say let's move on.
All right.
All right, now, let's talk about the current. Let's talk about the current.
Okay. Current barbecue.
The current ballot.
Current ballot. Yes, the current right. ballot.
So right. I want to, the current ballot, I'm going to say a name of a player, and you tell me
okay.
if they should be in the Hall of Fame.
No.
No, they should not.
No.
Or no, you're not going to tell me.
They should
all
not.
All right? All right. So I'm just going down the list here from, all right, here we go. And it doesn't, when you are making your decision, don't make your decision based on what year they are on the ballot.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Curt Schilling.
Yes.
Okay. Believe it or not, this is his eighth year.
Yeah, I know.
All right.
He's hated by the writers.
Yeah. But he should be. I agree with you. He's a Hall of Famer. Roger Clemens.
No.
Okay. You're saying no because of his drug use, right?
Yes. The
performance-enhancing drugs.
What I don't understand is these players, and Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, they were going, I would say definitely yes no matter what, if they didn't use drugs. I can understand the player who needed to hold on, to just stay in the league, to do that, take those measures. They did not need to take those measures. They were great no matter what. And right. they blew it, and they stained the game, and that's the way I feel.
Right. And they were great. That's the thing. They were great. Yes, the performance-enhancing drugs did help, but it didn't take them from an ordinary player to an incredible baseball player.
No, they were great, and they didn't have to do it.
Right, yeah.
I mean, you know what? Joe Schmo, needed to do it. These guys didn't.
All right, so Barry Bonds is next after Clemens, so we already know.
Yeah.
All right. Here's an interesting one. Well, Larry Walker.
Larry Walker. You know, he has that Coors Field thing going against him. You know what? I always say if you need to think about it, then a no. Personally, I probably would not vote for him, but I can see why people would.
So the argument with Larry Walker, of course, like you just said, Coors Field. Okay. But then, of course, what you do, and then everybody says, well, let's look at his stats at Coors Field and then look at his stats away from Coors Field. And, of course, the stats at Coors Field are better.
Right. I have to do them with newfangled stats, you know, the war and all that stuff. Right. So.
I'm borderline on that, too. I mean, I don't know. I would probably put him in. I'd put him in. All right, Omar Vizquel.
Yes.
Okay.
I thought he was a fantastic.
Yes.
Short-handed. He's on the level as Ozzie Smith.
Right. If Ozzie's in, he should be in.
Yes.
Problem. Not problem. Ozzie has more name recognition.
Ozzie was flashy.
Right.
He's a flashy.
Yes. Here's where I make the. You play nine innings on defense. You play nine innings on offense.
Right.
And yet, so you play equal amounts, but yet when it comes to Hall of Fame balloting, it's the offense that gets you in.
For the most part, yes.
Right.
Like I said, you know what? You mentioned Ozzie Smith.
Right.
Didn't hurt that he played for the Cardinals and won a couple of championships.
Right.
By the way, you know he also played for the Padres, right?
Yes.
And then Brooks Robinson, another example for his defense.
Right.
Which I would say almost Vizquel would go in because of his
defense.
And I would say, you know, Keith Hernandez as well.
Manny Ramirez.
Nope. Next.
Okay. Jeff Kent.
Nope.
See, I say yes.
You say yes.
I know, but
well, you'd be wrong. You'd be wrong.
Well, according to the voting, I would be wrong. Scott Rolen.
Again, no. I mean, good. Hall is very good.
Right. Exactly. Here's somebody. This is his fifth year on the ballot. I would have thought he'd be off like. A lot sooner than that, he wouldn't even be on anymore. But Billy Wagner.
Billy Wagner, fifth year? That's it?
Yeah.
You know how I feel about relievers.
Yeah, but, you know, it's funny. I don't.
And his stats, believe it or not, are better than Mariano's. If you take all those newfangled stats, you know, strikeouts per nine innings and blah, blah, blah. And this, you can make an argument he was the best reliever.
When I think of relievers, if I named top 10, top 20, Billy Wagner doesn't even, I don't even, he's not even a thought. So,
but statistically, he's really good.
Yeah,
all right. For a reliever. But, right. but here, my thing with relievers, I just don't think a guy who plays one inning, who pitches 80 innings or less a year. I mean, you know, that's one inning every other day. I you know my feelings. Next.
Right. Okay, Todd Helton.
No. Next.
Okay. This is an interesting one. Gary Sheffield.
Gary Sheffield. You know what? He does have a little PED stain on him. He complains he didn't know. Yeah, like they all said that. You know what? He does have that magical 500 home runs.
Yeah.
He does. But you know what? So does Rafael Palmeiro. And Rafael Palmeiro has 3,000 hits and 500 home runs. And he's off the ballot in 1 year because he pointed his finger at Congress.
Right. That's
and
right.
You know what? You know, if Bonds and Clemens get in, Rafael Palmeiro should be right up there with him.
Yeah, well, if that happens, then when they have the vote, you know, the modern day vote,
right,
they'll probably change things around.
It begs to think about if Bonds and Clemens are on the ballot, why isn't Palmeiro on there? Why was he always off right away? Because he pointed his finger to Congress.
Pointed his finger at Congress. That is definitely.
But Gary Sheffield, you know what? If 500 home runs is that threshold, he would be in.
Yeah.
But I'm not ready to put him in. I don't know.
Andy Pettit.
Nope. Very good pitcher.
Yeah.
Not Hall of Famer.
Yeah, and he also, you know, has the HGH.
Yeah, sorry, Yankee fans. He was a very good pitcher. Yeah. And you know what he has? He's the best postseason pitcher of all time.
Right.
You know, he pitched the best postseason pitcher of all time. Yeah.
Now, he was very good. Quite good.
Very good.
Yeah. Okay.
And I like Andy Pettit. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. He was a great pitcher.
Yeah.
Not Hall of Famer.
Sammy Sosa.
Well, you know what? He's very Bonds and Clemens.
Right.
You know what? But, you know, why isn't he tracking it as much as they are? That's very strange. But no.
Andrew Jones.
Nope. Next.
Okay. I'm just going down the list, so I'm not going to save this one for the end. Derek Jeter.
Who?
We need to get
Bob Shepard.
Yeah, we need Bob Shepard.
Right.
Derek Jeter.
You know, as that radio broadcaster Steve Summers says, number two in your program, number one in your hearts, the iconic one with intrinsic value.
All right, come on. Is he a Hall of Famer?
You know what? Why even discuss it? Number one.
Yeah.
I do want to say though.
Yes.
There are voters who only put Derek Jeter on a ballot this year, and no one else.
Now that's ridiculous.
That is because he's Derek Jeter. He's got to go in by himself. Yeah. He's the iconic one. You know, the greatest of all time. You know what? Please. There's actually going to be Hall of Famers I read that who are not going to show up because Derek Jeter's getting in. And we're talking about Andre Dawson and Tony Perez. Because Derek Jeter dumped them, fired them, when he took over the Marlins.
You know, Derek Jeter wasn't even the best shortstop on the Yankees. We've said this numerous times when A-Rod came over.
That's right.
All right. But anyway, he's a Hall of Famer. Bobby Abreu.
Nope.
Jason Giambi.
Nope.
Cliff Lee.
Nope. Next.
Rafael Furcal.
Next.
Eric Chavez.
Next.
Eric Chavez.
Next. Him too.
Josh Beckett.
Nope. Next.
Brian Roberts.
Next.
Alfonso Soriano.
Next.
I can't believe it's been five years already. Wow.
These guys are one and done.
Carlos Pena.
One and done.
Paul Konerko.
Nope.
Chone Figgins.
Nope.
I'm probably saying that name wrong. Raul Ibanez.
Nope.
Brad Penny.
Nope.
Adam Dunn.
Nope.
J.J. Putz.
Great name. Nope.
Jose Valverde.
Nope, nope, nope.
And last, and maybe least, Heath Bell.
No. So there you go. That's the Hall of Fame ballot for this year. We know one is definitely getting in. We know the two that are already in by the Modern Airing Committee. Right. You know what? There's also going to be another veteran committee vote. And Gil Hodges, I think, is on that ballot. Gil Hodges needs to get in the Hall of Fame.
That's ridiculous that he's not in. But all right, now wait a second. I'm gonna go back to this list. Why isn't Jeff Kent getting more consideration? You don't think Jeff Kent's a Hall of Famer?
No, I don't.
And you don't think he's a Hall of Famer because you think he was helped by Bonds being on the same team as Bonds?
Not necessarily.
He has great stats.
Yeah, he does have great stats, but you know what? You saw him play. I didn't think Hall of Famer.
Now, how do you feel about this? I'm looking at Kent, and then I'm thinking to myself, he has great stats, and especially great stats for a second baseman. But how do you feel about that? Like, you know, they say, well, he has great stats for a shortstop. He has great stats for a second baseman. Right. He has great stats. How do you feel about that? That it should go, like a third baseman should have better offensive stats or an outfielder should have better offensive stats than a shortstop.
You're saying Jeff Kent has great stats, and he does. And he might actually have better stats than Joe Morgan and Roberto Alomar. But you know what? I'm taking those two guys over Jeff Kent every day of the week.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, there are other great second basemen out there. Now, I take Jeff Kent over Bill Mazeroski, who I don't think should be all in the Hall of Fame. He had, you know, that one home run. I know he's a great defender, but he's really known for that one home run.
All right, I want to see. Is there anything else that I wanted to ask you?
Well, talking about Hall of Fame, why don't we do a Hall of Famer of the Day?
Yeah. All right. Hall of Famer of the Day.
Hall of Famer of the Day.
Now, Hall of Famer of the Day. I'm just... Maybe for year three, we should do some kind of music for that. I don't know. Whatever. We'll in our production meetings, we'll have to talk about that.
Right. Well, I've chosen for our Hall of Famer of the Day, when we talk about pitching, you know, who do we always compare them to? We talk about today's pitcher, you know, DeGrom, Cy Young Award winner. You have Gerrit Cole. You have Verlander. You have Kershaw.
You got Scherzer.
Strasburg. Right. You know, all the great people. But who do you compare them to? Oh, you compare them to Seaver. You compare them to Bob Gibson.
Yep.
Bob Gibson is the Hall of Famer of the Day for Baseball and BBQ episode number 49. Bob Gibson, what a tremendous pitcher. You should read the book, The Year the Pitcher, we had on Sridhar Prabhu, who was the author. Now, do you know his win-loss record is 251 and 174? So, you know what? He did not win 300 games. Would you be surprised that his ERA is 2.91 over his career? Now, when you think of Bob Gibson, you think of that magical year in 1968 when he went 22-9, did not lead the league in wins for some stupid reason, and he had a 1.12 ERA. He also had 13.
A 1.12 ERA.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the next year, they raised the mound because of him. Right.
Well, not just because of him, but, you know, large part. He had 13 shutouts. He has 13 shutouts that year. Last year, there was not 13 shutouts, you know, complete game shutouts by anybody last year. You know, collectively for the whole league. So that was 1968. In 1969, he comes back with a 20-13 record with 2.18 ERA. Again, not too shabby. He didn't lead the league, though. So that's surprising. He had 28 complete games. That led the league.
Look at those stats.
In 1970, he did lead the league in wins, 23-7. So he had 5 20-game winning seasons. He had a couple of 19-game winning seasons and 18. Now, when he first started in 1959 through 1961, I would say 62, he was okay. 28, 31, 34, and 30? About that. And his last couple of years, after in 1972, he went 19-11 with 2.46. But after that, he fell off in 1973, he was 12-10, 277, 74, 11-13. 3.83, and 75 his last year is 3-10. His shoulder was really bothering him.
Rotator cuff.
Rotator.
Maybe, I don't know.
And he ended up with a 5.04 ERA in that year. But he spent his whole entire career with the St. Louis Cardinals. He was an All-Star. He was a Cy Young. He was an MVP. In 1968, Cy Young and MVP. All-Star and Gold Glover. He won Cy Young twice. He was just the greatest pitcher of that, one of the greatest pitchers of that generation.
When you list great pitchers, Bob Gibson is one of them. And the funny thing is, Bob Gibson is, same year Denny McClain had a great year, but you don't even, Denny McClain doesn't sniff the great pitchers. He had, that was a great year for him, but Bob Gibson is one of the greatest.
Two-time World Series winner. He played in three World Series. He's two-time MVP in the World Series. He was in three World Series. They won two of them. And you know what? In those days, you can't get away with what you do today. You know, he was very intimidating.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's one of the things you always hear
and
about.
He got right? a bad reputation saying he was ahead. He was not. He did pitch up and in.
Yes, he did.
But you know who had more hit by batters, hit by pitches? It was Don Drysdale, who was more of a, if you want, lack for a better term, headhunter.
Right. And it's funny because you never think, you know, I guess because of what he did afterwards with the iced tea, right?
Right.
Dandy Don or whatever, Drysdale. But.
Right. So he was just a great, great pitcher. And let's see, Vin Scully says, what does his quote by Vin Scully say about Bob Gibson?
Gibson pitches as though he's double parked.
That means he got the ball and he threw it.
Right.
You know what? He did not take his time on the right. mound.
And the players appreciate that.
Yeah. And he, you know what? He wouldn't go seven. He'd go nine innings. He'd go the full nine innings. I don't know how he played. How would he be in the league today? You know, go seven innings and you're done. What?
He wouldn't. First of all, he wouldn't tolerate it.
No, he wouldn't. He wouldn't. So what does that Hall of Fame plaque say? Bob Gibson, St. Louis, National League, 1959 to 1975. Five-time 20-game winner. His 3,117 strikeouts made him only the second pitcher to reach 3,000. First man to fan 200 or more in a season 9 times. Set NL mark with 1.12 ERA in 1968, hurling 13 shutouts. Twice World Series MVP, setting record for consecutive victories, 7, consecutive complete games, 8, and strikeouts in a game, 17, and in a series with 35. Voted NL MVP in 1968 and Cy Young Award winner in 1968 and 1970. Won 9 Gold Glove Awards.
Very impressive. Very, very impressive. Again, when you think of great pitchers, Bob Gibson is definitely in there.
And yet he did not win 300 games.
Right. Right.
Yeah, he pitched a long time.
Yeah, he pitched enough years to win 300 games.
He pitched 17 years. And he had a lot of double-digit wins. I guess he just, the first couple and his last couple, just, you know, when he first started out and then his injuries, just he couldn't quite get there. But you know what? I'd take him on my team anytime.
Yeah. But back then, 300 wins was obtainable.
Yes.
But he was an incredible pitcher.
Yes.
300 wins now is not obtainable at all.
You know, he got in alone on the writer's ballot in 1981. But do you know who else was on that ballot who did not get in? Don Drysdale. He eventually went to the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Harmon Killebrew eventually got the Hall of Fame. Other Hall of Famers on the same ballot as Bob Gibson, who did not get in at that year. Hoyt Wilhelm, Juan Marichal, Nellie Fox, Red Shandy, Jim Bunning, Luis Aparicio, Richie Aspern, Orlando Cepeda, and Bill Mazeroski.
Okay.
They eventually made it into the Hall of Fame.
Right, but they were Hall of Famers.
They were.
Okay, so let's go back to that.
Except Bill Mazeroski. I gotcha. Do have a issue with that.
Back then, there were plenty of players that did not get in first ballot.
But nope.
To
nope.
me, if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer.
But Bob, you're talking about Derek Jeter getting 100% of the vote. Do you know how much percent of the vote Bob Gibson got? Would you be surprised if it's 84%? I am.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Right.
Yeah, who did not? It wasn't that the people didn't think he was a Hall of Famer. They just didn't want to put him in that year.
Right.
That's
maybe because of the other players on the ballot. They thought maybe they should give them the vote instead. But, you know, Bob Gibson was a no-brainer. And yet he only got 84% of the vote.
Right, he was a no-brainer. Times are much, much different.
Yeah.
Okay. Seaver, Gibson, those guys should have been unanimous.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, of course.
But now
you have the first unanimous. Right. Now it's, you have the Halo music. Oh!
I didn't even need to. I know the buttons to push to get you going, and I didn't even. I was going to say, but Mariano is the first unanimous. Yeah. A relief pitcher.
Yeah.
A relief pitcher.
Oh, please. Give me Bob Gibson any day.
Who is, in your estimation, and I know I'm putting you on the spot, you haven't had a chance to look into this.
Bob Gibson pitched 300 innings a couple of years.
I gotcha. But relief pitchers, and I know you're feeling our relief pitchers, but of the relief pitchers that are in the Hall of Fame, who really do you feel should definitely be in there? Deserves to be in there.
I would say the pitchers in the 60s and 70s who went three innings, who came in the seventh inning with a man on, two men on and one man out, and then pitched the rest of the game. You're talking about Raleigh Fingers.
Right.
You're talking about Rich Gossage.
Right.
Sparky Lyle, who's not in the Hall of Fame, but those type of guys.
Eckersley?
Eckersley, again, he the one who started the one inning. Tony La Russa started him with the one inning thing.
Okay.
I don't know. Eckersley, you know, he was a great starter.
Right.
And then a great one-inning guy.
Well, I mean...
One-inning!
You also had... So I always thought that on the Yankees, what's his name, that they made he pitched a no-hitter.
Oh, Verghetti.
Yeah. And then they made him... I never understood that. Now, maybe... I don't know. I was young when that happened.
Maybe it was a team guy. They needed someone for the bullpen. Yeah. You know what? John Schmoltz did it.
Yeah. Right.
He did not get 300 wins because he spent... I think it was 3 years, guys. If I'm wrong, correct me. Give us a call. Let me know how many years it was. But I think he spent 3 years as a reliever.
Okay, but Rigetti. I don't know what kind of career Rigetti would have had, but they made him a reliever, and then they kept him as a reliever.
Yeah,
and he was a very good reliever. But I wonder. You wonder what kind of trajectory his career would have had if he stayed a starter. Could he have been a Hall of Famer?
We'll never know.
Right. Those players did what they were asked. Well, I don't know about. He did. Maybe not all players would have done that.
Right.
I don't know. But he did. All right. So, Jeff, Hall of Fame, we talked about all the players, the ballot, all that. And now...
Len, let's transition to barbecue for a second. I saw something in the newspaper, and I'd like to get your opinion on it, okay?
Sure.
This is in the New York Post on December 18th, 2019. A little barbecue story we got going here. This is how they do BBQ down under. Temperatures in Australia are so hot right now that a man from Perth was able to cook a 3.3-pound piece of pork inside his car. Stu Pendley said he placed the meat on a metal tray in front of his front seat Friday morning. 10 hours later, it was ready to eat. And he had cut off a bit and chowed down.
Wow, so his car is his cooker.
His car is his cooker.
His car is a smoker.
Yes. It took him 10 hours to cook it, but, you know, low and slow.
Actually, that's a normal. That's normal, right? Maybe not for 3.5. What'd you say? It was 3.5 pounds?
Yeah, 3.5 pounds. Yeah,
that's a little long for 3.5 pounds, but okay. So, you know what? That makes me think of all the great barbecue that we had that wasn't cooked in a car. you know, we went to, we talked about it in the opening, all the, you know, the barbecue things that we did, but we're in the future, in our third year, we're planning on continuing our barbecue tour.
Right.
So, again, we went to a smokehouse, and there's plenty of restaurants around. We spoke to Dave Marks of Operation Barbecue Relief, and I don't think that we could possibly give that organization enough what do you call it, props, right, or compliments, or just the respect that that organization deserves. I mean, I just saw them doing something. Oh, I was on Facebook or something where they were cooking like 5,000 meals for, I forget exactly for who, but it was just, these guys are always doing something for other people. If you want a perfect example at the holiday time of you know, people giving of their time, that's a perfect organization.
Yes.
So we, of course, went to events. Barbecue Guru, love them. Also want to thank them. They sent you the hat. That's right. Jeff mentioned the hat in the last episode, and don't you know it, right away, they said, oh, Jeff's got to have a hat.
Thank you, Lisa Joe.
And her mom.
And her mom. Joanne, thank you.
And so thank you, guys. It's been a great year, and we're going to do a lot more with barbecue. Maybe we'll cook something in the car.
Maybe we'll. And guys, give us a call. Communicate with us. Tell us what you want to hear from us. Give us a call, 516-855-8214. Email us, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Go on our Facebook page, leave a comment. Tweet us, @baseballandbbq. Instagram, baseballandbarbecue, barbecue all spelled out. Our website, www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. And coming in 2020, more video. Check out our YouTube page.
Yes, we have YouTube. So take a look at that. We will do more video. And I forget, when did we go to, whose grave was that we went to?
Oh, John Montgomery Ward.
Yeah. Did we do that in the second year, the first year?
It was between the first and second year.
Okay. So we're definitely going to do plenty of road trips in the new year.
We want to go to Lou Gehrig's final resting place and Babe Ruth.
Yes. That's right. So, guys, plenty of authors. We're looking forward to it. Can't wait. Let's do a third year.
Yes. You got it.
All right.
All right. With that, I am Jeff.
I'm Len.
See you next time.